Welcome to the Sourdough Speak, the University of Alaska Broadcasting Services, in cooperation with Alaska Communication Arts, brings you this series of discussions about the history and development of the Great Valleys of Interior Alaska, the Yukon, and the Tanana, and the city of Fairbanks, which developed with the coming of miners during the great gold stampedes at the turn of the century. In this series, the Sourdough Speak, pioneer Alaskans tell you their stories about their lives as they saw and played a part in the unfolding story of Alaskan growth. Now here is your host for this series, Neville Jacob.
When you listen to Louis Black tell his stories, you begin to feel yourself sitting by a campfire, logs crackling under a pale sky of the long northern evening. When the mood is right, you're sipping another cup of coffee and listening to just one more tale before the embers fade. Few storytellers can relate such unique incidents to the animals of Alaska that you hear from Louis Black in this broadcast of Sourdough Speak, and they truly recall the special quality of the Alaska wilderness. Louis is German. He sailed around the world many times, but Alaska became his second home, and he has always returned to Alaska after one of his excursions into some other part of the world. Let him tell you how he first came to Alaska.
Well, I ran away from Germany, like any kid would. And I came to England, and I made a trip out of England to the Black Sea, to the Mediterranean, and down to the Isle of Madagascar. And I come back, then I stowed away to Canada. And from Canada, I made my way per boxcar eventually down to the United States. And I landed in the United States in 1903. And then, 2 years later, I already landed in Alaska. I wanted to see the world. That's why I left home for. And that was the only reason, it's still the only reason. I wanted to see everything, the whole world, and I did.
Bears are bad business for most people, if you get too close. But perhaps Louis has a special affinity for wild animals. One of the most astonishing encounters with a bear family is part of Louis' experience. Let him tell you.
It was in the fall of 1915. It happened down on Otter Creek in the Iditarod country. There was a fellow with the name of Billy Bristol and I. We went up there. We were supposed to cut wood for the mining for the next year. So we went up Otter Creek, to the head of Otter Creek, about 22 miles, and there was a mountain range, and with trawls going up little creeks, anywhere from a mile and a half to two, three miles long. And we went up there, he would go up one and estimate the timber. Then he'd come back, and then I'd go up the next one, and he lay down and sleep. So it was a beautiful day in October, what you call the Indian summer day. Nice and balmy, or the first part of October. So my turn came to lay down and sleep and wait for him. As he went up, he carried a rifle. I didn't. We just one rifle between us. But where I was laying, there was a big blueberry patch close by. And I was lying up against a clump of bush and sound asleep. Finally, I heard someone calling me. I woke up, and here I saw him about 150 feet with a rifle pointed. He says, "Who's your friend?" I looked around, and there were five bears right alongside us. The big mother bear was right alongside of me. And the old bear, he was a little bit off, and three cups in between. I looked, and then I hollered to him, put your rifle down and don't come near me. Because I already know they were peaceful. And if they see the rifle and he come with a rifle, they might get hostile. Well, while I was watching them, I just sat there and watched them. I had my feet stretched out like that. One of the cops come and start to play with my feet. So I spread my feet out good and started to wiggle them. The reason I stretched them out so I wouldn't want to hurt them. And this little devil, he had a ball. He screamed and he jumped up and down and squealed and played and coughed them feet of mine. And the more I wiggled them, the more happier he got. The old bear looked over. He knew that I wasn't hurting the pup, and they know he had a good time, too. And even the sow, she was right close by alongside of me. She, once in a while, she just looked at him. But they finally proused away, and they got about 30 feet away. This little devil was still playing. Then the sow come back halfway, and she let out a roar. And then, as much to say, get over here, Neil. Then he run up to him and joined him. And I sit there and I just kept watching him. And the little devil come back. He wanted to play some more with my feet. So I let him play. And the more I wiggled the feet, oh, he never wanted to leave. Then the south, I looked around to the left. She came at an angle from the left side. They were behind me, you see. But instead of coming right to the cup and where my feet was, she came around on the other side and passed me and come down on the right side. And she stood behind the cup. He was still playing, and I was still wiggling the feet, and she just took a look some... He's studying something. And sure enough, then she held out with her paw. She didn't want the cup to be thrown right at me. She held her paw and she hit him, and her paw came up like that. He went up about 5 feet and landed 12 feet away. And as he did, he passed me by 1 foot. And then he run. But instead of follow him, she come back on the right side again, and she stopped right where I was sitting, and I looked at her, and she stuck her face right close into mine, and she had a funny expression on her face. And then she went, wah, wah, as much to say, that's the way to make a mind. And honestly, she looked so human. And it was so funny and so human, the whole proceeding. I looked right in her face when she had the countenance of a kind old lady, honestly. I felt like getting up and hugged the old girl and check paws with her. And then as she went, wah, wah, and honestly, I swore she tried to laugh. And then she went. And I laid back and laughed. And I couldn't help it. It was all so funny. So when I finally got up, they got too far away. I went back to my partner. He still stood there way off. He said to me, "What was you laughing at?" I said, "Potter, have you seen what I seen and went through? You to laugh too." And another time, does that take it all? It was in the Circle Country. I come there in the spring to represent some claims. So I thought I'd go up in the hill and cut enough wood to last me during the summer, firewood to cook with. There were three bears I met. But the minute I see him, I had the axe in my hand. I just sway around and walk away from them. And they finally, that went on for about a week. Every day I seen them. One great big old bear and one three-year-old and one yearling. And they know that I wasn't after them. And I started to cut the first tree down and hear that three-year-old bear sitting on his haunches watching me, cutting the tree down. Then I had to be careful, and I was hoping he'd get away so the tree won't hurt him. So I stopped cutting the tree down all and then to another tree until he was gone. Then I knocked him over. So during the summer, 2 miles from the cap, my cabin up the creek, there was a little mining company. They had a dining room there, and the cook was cooking there. They had about a dozen men, and he was a friend of mine. Whenever I got tired of my own cooking, I thought I'd go up the trail and see old Bill and bum him for a meal. So one day I started out. I had always my lead dog. I took him in the hills with me, my leader. I seen this big bear coming down the trail. And right away, I told Buster, get in the barn. I had a stick so he could slip in the piece of canvas, push it on the side and get in the barn, an old barn. Then I started to walk. I didn't have no rifle, not a stick with me. I thought I'd take a chance. And this old bear come lumbering down the trail. When I got within about a dozen feet, I just stepped off the trail and kept on going. And in passing me, just made like that, hello, like if he was a human being. And he just shaking his head and kept on going. So I walked about 24 some odd feet and went back on the trail. He stood in the trail looking back and wondering who that guy was. So then he went on and I went my way and he went his way. Then it happened once more that way. A few weeks later, and I seen him come, I started out the same way. And as I got within 12 or some odd feet, I just stepped on the side, and kept on going. And this time, when I passed him, I don't understand. I said, hello. And he, checking his head, and kept on going. But he never stood up this time to see who I was. I guess he found out by that time. So you see, the bear among animals, I found out, bears, the black bear, is a friendly animal if he knows you're not after him. You mind your way and he mind his. I wouldn't go that far to save brownies. I know what I would have not started out, not the brown bear, but the black bear, he's a friendly animal. Yeah, and I like black bears ever since, and I saved 2 black bears from getting shot. One was an Indian, one was a white man. And I told him, you killed that black bear, and I'm going to kill you. Period. Yes, became my friend.
We asked Louis if he had met any unfriendly animals.
I stood off 2 packs of wolves. Well, one night, I was moving camp. This happened out in the South Chattanooga country, also a creek called Flat Creek. I moved camp and I had just one dog with me and kept this one dog to haul water and one thing and wood with. And then I moved, I put everything on, I had a small 5-foot sled. That's all I had, what it had handlebars on there and crossbars. Got dark on me and the trail was bad, really bad. And no sooner I come down the creek onto the main trail, it was dark, getting dark. And then I noticed, in the on both sides of me, like, glaring light. I know right away what it meant, wolves. They were running on both sides of me. I could see their eyes in the dark. On both sides of me, all I could see, lots of light, was those eyes. I know what it was. I've seen lots of them. Then I know I had to take my time. Never run from wolves. Never. I was on snowshoes and I helped put my hand on the crossbar to hold the dog from, keep him from running, and carry the rifle in one hand. And I slowed down. That 2 miles took me 3 hours and a half. I went slow and had to be careful not to stumble. If the dog had started to got away from me, it'd have been disaster for me and the dog. If I had stumbled and fell down, it would have been the same thing, and I know it. That's what they were waiting for. It took me 3 hours and a half. Every once in a while I would stop and rest a little, stand up, and kept looking around. They were watching me close. And very careful so I wouldn't stumble and fall, and the trail was bad. When I finally got to my base camp, in front of the camp, the snow was patted down good. I kicked the snowshoes off right away. I opened the door, and that dog went in, flat and all. Then I followed him right in, and I had an old stable lantern there. Old-fashioned stable lantern. I lit that and come out, and here I seen them, all about 100 feet or 20 feet away. They stood in the trail. They missed it. There was about anywhere between 20 and 25 or so. They had missed it. Then I could hear them howl in the hills for 3 hours afterwards. They know they missed the boat. Then another time, I come down Wood River. I supposed to look up a fella, and he's supposed to have a place on the river to know where the creek is, where he was living on. This was in the Bonnerfield, up on the headwaters of the Wood River. And I could hear coming down, looking for the places which I never could see, but for the simple reason the creek had made a turn and land and went into the river downriver way, so I couldn't see the place. And it was getting dark, and I could hear the wolves howl from all over, giving signals. I started to look for a camping place. I finally got to a place. There was a bluff, a big bluff at about 60 feet away from the river. And there was a lot of stunted spruce all around, just like a cordon. There was a clearing there. When I got there, I cut a trail through there was about 12 feet I had to cut through the spruce trees, got into the clearing. I put the tent up right away and put the stove up, the first thing. Then I cut the tree down, chopped it up. By that time, I could hear the wolves coming closer. I had 7 dogs. So I put the tent up right in front of the bluff, and then I tied the dogs up in a V shape in front of the tent. And I had one of those rubber mattresses. I closed that up and had a good fire going, and I heated up some water and paid no attention to the wolves. And then I cooked rice, and I found a dead mule on the trail the day before, and I chopped enough of that for one meal for the dog. And all I would do, I cook the rice when it gets cooked, just chop that meat up in small pieces and stir it in and let it cool that way. In the meantime, the wolves were howling, and I paid no attention to them. I knew as long as I was on my feet, they wouldn't dare to come in. And then, when I had the fire and everything gone, and I had fed the dog and myself, I always eat the same as the dog. I help myself first what I want and give them the rest. By that time, then I had in the sled, I had the milk box where I kept stuff in, and I put that in the middle of the tent and had those minor candles, short, they're thick. I had the candle burning all night. Then I put the mattress on the floor right through the tent opening. And I lay down, and I had 3 rifles and a shotgun all loaded and 2 axes ready for them. And I lay there all night talking to the dogs, quieting them, and they're watching me. And they know as long as I'm not afraid and get excited, they'll be all right. In the meantime, they run up and down all night, howling, trying to find a way to get in. But they know they couldn't come in only about 1 or 2 at a time, and I know I had a chance. But as soon as the sun went up, it was in the earlier part of March, they disappeared. And out on the riverbank, there had been 2.5 feet of snow. They had patted that down, running up and down. It was like a sidewalk. Running up and down all night, and I watched their eyes through the trees and howling all night. And my dogs, they just whined a little, but I talked to them. And as soon as the sun was up, away they went. And it was just like this. Then finally, loaded the sled again and got the sled out on the river and packed up. Then I went up river again. This time I could see the blazes from downriver, and I got there.
There are many terrifying stories about packs of wolves in the north, but there's another kind of animal that runs in a group, the herd, that is less frightening. We asked Louis if he'd ever seen a large herd of caribou.
I rode to a caribou herd, over 10,000 of them, and I rode right through them on horseback. I had to check my horse and my dog on the horse with me so they wouldn't kill him, trample him. And I got off the horse and I had one of them hats filled full of rocks and took the dog on me, and I had on the horse this rocks in front of me, and I had to throw rocks at them for the damn animals to get out of the way. There were over 10,000. I never saw so many animals at once.
Another time, Louis came in close contact with a lone caribou.
It was in 1924. I went up in the Circle Country. I think that was the same year that I had that encounter with the bears. But anyhow, I was sent up there to do assessment work. And while I was digging, I had to dig a train, what you call a bedrock train. You go right into the hill and where the leap, where the water runs off. It was a wet creek. The water keeps running off right in the creek. Well, I got down to about 6 feet at the head of the drain, and only about a foot on the mouth. And I had the rifle with me, and then as I worked with the shovel, I figured I could hear when the caribou come up the creek. So I was out of meat, and I've always figured I'd not get a chance to pick the one I want. But as it happened, they went up the creek, and one big bull caribou, big, immensely big bull caribou, came right toward where I was working. And I was down in the drain, which was about almost 6 feet deep by that time. had the rifle behind me, and I was leaning on the shovel underneath of my chin light and looking up, but he never saw me. And finally he jumped. First I looked underneath of his chin, his whiskers, then he jumped and I looked at his tail, and he stood there on the side at what the door. So I took the flat of the shovel and hit him right square on the rump. Then he snorted and he kicked and took off as fast as he could up a hill that was about 60 feet away. Then when he got up to the hill, he done what I never seen an animal done yet. He jumped off of 4 feet and at the same time jumped around. Then he looked down the hill to see who hit him. I could have shot him, but I didn't have the heart. No, I wouldn't have shot that animal that gave me so much fun and I laughed so much. I wouldn't have killed him if I'd have starved to death.
As a matter of fact, people have starved to death for being unable to catch game. We asked Louis how to catch small animals, like rabbits, for example.
Make a snare, make a trail, snowshoe trail, and put your snare across. But at the same time, right behind the snare, you stick a few spruce boughs in and leave just enough those trees so he can see through, and then he jumped through there and wants to get, instead of running around, and he gets caught. I caught one morning on Christmas, and I took all the snares off, those that were closest. I didn't want to kill anything on Christmas Day. But I went over the snare anyhow, but there was one rabbit. He was alive. He was caught around the belly. But he was almost all in, you know, making an effort to get away. So I untied him. And then I set him in the trail. I wasn't going to kill him. And he was sitting there. I waited until he got his wind. Then I walked up to him, just touched him with the snowshoe. And he jumped. He fell on the side. So I waited again till he come to. As soon as he set up, I walked up to him, touched again. He fell on this side. Then he sat up, and he sat there and getting his wind. This time I walked up to him, he took off.
The spirit of Christmas, in his love for animals and the wilderness, walks all year with Louis Black. Louis now lives at the Fairbanks Pioneer Home, and all agree that his stories of the wilderness are among the best and a part of the spirit of Alaska. This is Neville Jacobs saying we're glad you joined us for another interview with an Alaskan pioneer in the Sourdough Speak.
You have been listening to the Sourdough Speak, a series of discussions about the history and development of interior Alaska in taped interviews with pioneer Alaskans. The Sourdough Speak was produced by Alaska Communication Arts in conjunction with the University of Alaska Broadcasting Services.